He feels a little chill. Can I bring him this blanket?
Sure.
All right.
Thank you. It's sad when a mother has to speak the words that condemn her own son, but I couldn't allow them to believe that I would commit murder. They'll put him away now, as I should have, years ago. He was always bad, and in the end he intended to tell them I killed those girls and that man, as if I could do anything except just sit and stare, like one of his stuffed birds. Well, they know I can't even move a finger, and I won't. I'll just sit here and be quiet, just in case they do suspect me. They're probably watching me. Well, let them. Let them see what kind of a person I am. I'm not even going to swat that fly. I hope they are watching. They'll see. They'll see, and they'll know, and they'll say, why, she wouldn't even harm a fly.
This week on the podcast, buy a used car from Charlie, California, and don't stay in room number one, and definitely do not go talk to Norman Bates' mother. That's right. This week, we're talking about Psycho on 100 Movies I Love.
100 Movies You Love.
I'm Jason Martin.
I am Paul Conlon.
And yeah, we're talking about Psycho.
1960. Black and white.
Black and white. Very, obviously, a very famous movie. Very famous movie.
Was this the first movie with the twist ending?
I don't know. I mean, it's, I don't know if it's the first, but it's definitely one of the biggest.
And it didn't really come at the end.
Right. 15, well, sort of both. Well, yeah. Yeah. But also the idea of what you think is your lead actress getting killed halfway through the movie. Spoiler alert.
Getting killed. People don't know.
Right. But yeah, the twist, I don't know if it was the first one, but it's certainly one of the most biggest ones of all time.
Most well-known, most effective.
Yeah, and this is, I've said before, like, if I could ever go back and have where I didn't know, like, rewatch a movie for the first time, this would be it for the twist of, like, holy shit. Like, what? What's going on? You know?
Yeah. It's just so prevalent in society.
Right.
That even people who've never seen the movie know so much about that aspect of it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. I like it. You know, you get the opening here, the credits, the old-fashioned way it used to be, where you get pretty much all your credits right up front.
Yeah.
And at the end, there's nothing except the end. And the graphics on here are very similar to what they used in the movie Catch Me If You Can. With the bars, the animation, the music isn't extremely similar, but you could tell that Spielberg, or whoever did it for Spielberg in that movie, sort of was, you know, a little bit of an homage to Psycho. Not that the movies are very similar, but you know, there's probably other movies from that era that they might have been copying. But the movie opens up with a. You see on the screen where they're at. They're in Phoenix, and it tells like what day it is, what time of day, and it's you know, it's the affair. They're talking about the affair. You got Sam and Marion in the hotel room, and then she mentions what type of hotel they're in. So that clue, that basically gives away the fact that, you know, they're having an affair. It's not a good hotel. It's just they're there for the affair. They're talking about the future. You know, if we could be together in the future. And he's talking about, sure, that'll be great. You'll be living above the apartment, the hardware store I work in, trying to pay my wife's alimony. And then she says, let's get married. And he said, yeah, you know, basically they want to, but, you know, financially, he just can't afford to do it. He's like, maybe if my ex-wife gets remarried, there's no more alimony. So you set up that they definitely want to be together, but they need money.
Yeah.
To be able to do it. And then we see she goes to her job and at her desk, and the other woman working there is played by Hitchcock's daughter.
Pat Hitchcock.
Yeah, Pat Hitchcock.
Pat Hitchcock, who died exactly 1 month ago from the day we're recording.
Yes, August 9th. She died exactly 1 month ago, which was weird when I looked it up. You too. Separately, we looked it up and like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, I want to know, is it the daughter or the wife? I'm not sure she was related to him. Mm-hmm. And who was she in the movie? I'm like, I recognize her right away. It was the other secretary at the office, real estate office. Mm-hmm. But the death date was like, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And I looked them all up and I didn't expect anybody from this movie to still be alive. But the woman who played Lila, Vera Miles.
Vera Miles still alive.
She's still alive. Yeah. She's, you know, in the early 80s probably or something, but she's still alive. And then a guy walks in with a cowboy hat on and Mr. Cassidy actually. Well, Mr. Cassidy comes talking about his daughter's wedding, which is going to happen tomorrow. And he's got $40,000 in cash on him. And I think Pat Hitchcock, her character, she says, I declare. And he says, I don't. That's why I get to keep it. Yeah. And you know, their boss isn't thrilled with the fact that he's carrying all this cash in there. But then he asks Marion to go to the bank to make this, to put it in the safe deposit box at the bank. Yeah. And Marion is saying she's got a headache, and she's like, you know, I guess I'll put this money in the bank and then I'll go home and sleep it off. And her boss is like, yeah, that's fine. It's a Friday. Go ahead, you know. And the next scene, we see the money laying on the bed in the envelope, and she's wearing like her undergarments. So we know that she didn't go straight to the bank. We know right away she didn't go to the bank, you know, at least not yet. And she's packing a suitcase, and she puts the envelope in the suitcase or in her purse. I can't remember, but either way.
In the purse.
Yeah, the purse, yeah.
It's important because in the original scene with Loomis in the hotel room having the affair, she's dressed in a white bra and a white slip, and she has a white purse.
Okay.
And then later when she takes the money, she's wearing black bra and it's a black purse.
Oh, okay. I
did that show. She was pure and angelic before, but now, having decided to take the money, she's turned to the dark side. Yes.
Oh, didn't know that. Didn't know that. And I noticed that she's wearing black undergarments, but I didn't realize that her purse had changed colors. So she's driving, leaving, and we know that she's planning on basically taking the money. And the voices in her head, and she's imagining what Sam will say to her, you know, when she shows up with the money. And then she's imagining that. And then she's at a stoplight, and her boss and the rich guy, whatever, passes by her car and looks at her like he's not sure, like, why am I seeing you right now? But he doesn't stop her, but he's like, I'm not sure if this makes sense. I think Pulp Fiction made it a little homage to, you know, Ving Rhames stopping in front of Bruce Willis, but Bruce Willis actually hits him with a car. I think that was Pulp Fiction was definitely an homage to this scene in Psycho. So she's driving out of town, and next we see her car on the side of the road, and Marion is sleeping on the side of the road, sleeping in her car. A cop pulls up, knocks on the window, and you know, she's like, oh, I'm sorry. I was about to run off the road. I figured I'd just sleep. And he's like, why didn't you get a hotel? Well, I didn't think I'd be out this long. And she's basically like, well, you know, did I do anything wrong? Am I acting if there's something wrong? And he said, frankly, yes. You know, you are acting as something's wrong. He looks at her driver's license, everything, checks her out, doesn't arrest her. He can't arrest her, but he follows her.
Yeah.
And When he asks when may I see your license, she blocks his view of her purse, you know, so he won't see the envelope with the cash or whatever in her purse. He drives to a used car lot. The cop is still following her. And she buys a newspaper, an LA newspaper, just to see if there maybe is anything in the newspaper about what happened. And there isn't. The used car salesman, California Charlie, played by John Anderson, who he's got a very familiar face. And of course, I've seen this movie a bunch of times. Well, we've already saw him on the countdown. He was Kennesaw Mountain Landis in Eight Men Out. And he actually looks, at that age, he actually looks a lot like Kennesaw Mountain Landis, the baseball commissioner that,
Blackball the White right. Sox.
Yeah, exactly.
Blackball the Black Sox.
Yeah, something like that, exactly.
Blackball the Black Sox. Yeah. Blackball the White Sox, yeah.
Yeah. The cop is watching her. He's parked across the street. California Charlie walks up to her, and first thing he says is, I'm in no mood for trouble. And she's like, what? Because she's already on the defense, like, has someone, like, caught on to me? He's like, well, you know, they say the first customer of the day is always trouble. And she's like, oh, no, I don't want any trouble or anything. She wants to trade her car in, and she's in a hurry. She's like, oh, this one's fine. I just want to trade my car in. He's like, don't you want to take it for a test drive? No, it's fine. They're talking price, and then she doesn't even want to haggle. And that's when he starts to look at her like, and then Charlie sees the cop waiting across the street too. And she doesn't even want to haggle. So
he knows he's trouble.
He's looking, something's wrong.
He's right about trouble first.
He can't prove it, but he knows something's off. She goes to the bathroom to get the money out. For the car, to get $700 for the car. She comes out, and Charlie still wants her to take it for a test drive, and she says no. She starts to pull away in her new car, her used car, and the man stops her, the mechanic who looked at the car. It's like, wait. She almost left her luggage. Of course, she's paranoid that they're stopping her for something else. And as she drives away, I love this sight that the cop and Charlie California and the mechanic, are all three of the men, are looking at her as she drives away. Like something's off here. Something's wrong. In her head, she's imagining the conversation between Charlie and the officer. And Charlie says, heck, officers, that was the first time I ever saw the customer, high pressure salesman. And he said, somebody's chasing her. The cop's saying, I better have a look at those papers. And trying to figure out who she is and if she is, did something wrong. And Charlie said to the cop, does she look like the wrong one to you? She acted like one, you know, which is true. She acted like something's wrong. And he said, the only funny thing is she paid me $700 in cash. So, you know, and this is all in her head, imagining what their thing is. And then she's imagining what happened at work. And, her boss is saying Marion still isn't in, and she's like, no, Mr. Lowry, but then she's always a bit late on Monday mornings. And she's imagining Cassidy talking to Lowry about the money. She watched me as I dumped it out, planning and even flirting with me. So it's interesting because he definitely was flirting with her. He was flirting with her. Of course, she wasn't flirting with him, but in her mind, she imagined that he's going to say she was flirting with him. She's driving along the road, and it's pouring the rain down. And luckily, there's a
hotel sign.
There's a, yeah, and it's Bates Motel is there.
Bates Motel.
Yeah, lucky for her. Bates Motel.
So lucky for her.
Right. And she gets talking to Norman Bates. You probably heard that name before. She says, I thought I'd gotten off the main road. He explains that, the highway used to go right by here, and that's why we don't get much business anymore. She signs the guest book, Marie Samuels.
Yep.
And he asked her, you know, can you have your address? Well, the city, at least, just the city. And she looks at her newspaper with probably the LA Times, I think. And she's like, Los Angeles, you know, puts LA as her home. He takes her to cabin one. He's like, it's enclosed in case you want anything. She's like, no, I just want to sleep more than anything else except maybe some food. Norman shows her to her room, points to the bathroom, but he won't like, he's like shy about saying, hey, this is the bathroom. You know?
And then over here is that.
Right, right. Invites her to eat with him. She's like, well, it won't be much, just sandwiches and some milk. You know, so she agrees to eat with him. She's looking for a place to hide the money better. And she wraps it in a newspaper and lays it on a nightstand, which is important. And Marion, outside the window, hears Mrs. Bates talking to Norman. And she is berating him and basically talking about, you know, him complaining about him, probably hitting on some woman, and just talking really bad about him. So a little bit later, they eat in the office. She's eating the sandwiches. And they go into the parlor where he's got his taxidermy, a bunch of stuffed birds. Yeah.
Not creepy at all.
Right, right. And Norman says, you eat like a bird. And she said, well, you would know, of course. And he says, well, that's actually a fallacy. The birds eat quite a lot, actually. And of course, he's trying to say fallacy, but he's stuttering. He's very shy around her. Norman is talking about the man that Mother married when he died. He said, and the way he died, it was too great a shock for her. She had nothing left. And Marion said, well, except you. And Marion says, why don't you put her on her place? And Norman starts to turn dark here, a little bit threatening toward her. At this point, Marion has rethought and says she needs to go back to Phoenix. He stepped into a private trap back there, and I think I need to try to pull myself out of it. So she's rethought her whole thing. So she's planning on going back and giving the money back and hope she's not in trouble. And this is where Norm is watching through the peephole. He removed the painting from the wall. And you see Marion writing in a notebook. And she's writing 40,000 minus 700 she paid for the car. So she's doing some math there.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly what math she was doing.
How much you owed, how much she's
right, right, that kind of stuff. Right. Seems pretty simple, but yeah, I know exactly. And she tears the paper up and throws it in the toilet, except one little piece.
Didn't quite make it, I guess.
Right, right. Okay, so it's time for her to take a shower. So this is one of the most famous scenes in movie history right here. Besides it, you know, shocking, but the lead, what we think is the lead actor's getting
this
killed.
This is nearly halfway through the movie, right. And up until this point, the entire movie has been about Marion Crane.
Yes.
and then things take a turn for the, well, they just go down the drain, don't they?
Yeah, they do. Along with that, what is it, chocolate syrup?
Bosco.
Bosco? Yeah. Okay.
Because it showed up better on black and white than fake blood.
Oh, okay, yeah. Norman comes, well, the mother comes in and stabs her. We don't see him up close too much. But, you know, this was a movie we already done, Vacation, where they paired it with Chevy Chase with a banana in his hand and his wife's in the shower and he stabs her, so... So she's dead on the floor and it pans around the room. It shows, you know, everything, very famous scene. Pans around the room and it pans to the newspaper on the nightstand with the money in it. And you hear Norman saying up at the house saying, oh, mother, blood. And then you see Norman running from the house and he goes into the room and sees her laying there and is shocked by it, and so Norman's going to clean it up. He cleans it up, he puts her in the trunk, he walks out with her suitcase, puts it in the trunk, and he's done, and he turns the light out, and then he goes back and turns the light. He looks around one more time and sees the LA Times newspaper laying on the bedside. He grabs it and also puts it in the trunk. He drives the car over. He parks at the edge of a swamp, pushes it in, it slowly goes down and then stops. And you hear the noises of the glug, glug, glug of it going underwater. And it stops. And then Norman's like kind of biting his nails. Like, oh my, what's going on? Uh-oh, I've got a problem here. And then it continues again. And it goes all the way down. And the car is submerged in the swamp. So,
yeah.
You don't have to worry about that now. Now, Sam is back at work at his hardware store he works at. This is where Lila Crane walks in, which is Marion's sister. We haven't seen yet. And she says, is Marion here? And Sam says, of course not. And Arbogast, the PI, is watching. Martin Balsam, watching through the window. He walks in and interrupts their conversation. And he's asking him what's going on or whatever. And he's like, a little checking. I could get to believe you. And Lila says, I don't care if you believe me or not. And Arbogast goes to the hotel to visit Norman, trying to figure out what's going on. He says,
he goes to every hotel. He checks out.
Well, yeah, yeah.
He believes she was in the area. So he's checking out every hotel
right.
the area. He didn't just go right.
No.
But he winds up there.
Yeah. And he says, looking for a missing person. And Norman says, well, no one stopped by here in a couple of weeks. And he's got a picture of her. And he's like, well, we haven't anyone in a couple of weeks. He's like, well, would you like to look at her at least? If you look at the picture at least before you commit to it. And finally he looks at it and he admits that, oh yeah, that's her. It's not a good picture of her, but Arbogast is trying to trip him up. And when Norman finally admits she was there, he's very nervous, stuttering a lot. And Arbogast says something is missing. He talks to Norman. Norman says, well, come with me. You can help me change the beds. He sees him avoid room number one when they're going to go. And Arbogast goes to look up at the house and sees the woman up there in the house sitting in a chair. But he knows he avoids room number one, so that's most likely where she stayed. And on the payphone, Arbogast is talking to Lila and says, yeah, she was here. Arbogast says, I got all there is to get, not entirely satisfied, but I don't think Norman did anything, but I'm not entirely satisfied. But I'll go to the house, talk to the mother. And she says, I don't think our friend Sam Loomis knew Marion was here. Arbogast walks into the office, snoops around. Norman isn't there. He's going to talk to Norman. He walks up to the house. And then Arbogast walks up the stairs. And here comes Mrs. Bates, stabs him. And that famous weird little shot of Arbogast almost floating downstairs. You know, that was always not
a very Hitchcocky look.
Yeah, yeah. And very like him just like, whoa, falling down the stairs. So he's gone. And now Lila and Sam are talking about Arbogast not showing up. Like he said, he was going to be here for an hour. They go to the sheriff's house in the middle of the night. Sheriff thinks maybe the PI left with the money. And the sheriff mentioned to these people, like, you must remember that bad business out here 10 years ago. And at the time, he doesn't keep talking, but he assumes they know the local news, but they obviously probably don't remember the name at least. The sheriff calls the motel and...
Well, there's something else. Mm-hmm. They said that Arbogast said he was going to talk to Mrs. Bates, and the sheriff's wife goes, oh, Norman got a girl? Or Norman got married?
Oh, that's right. That's right.
So that's first real clue that there's something about the mom.
Oh, right. Okay. But the sheriff calls the hotel, and Norman, he asked about Arbogast, but the first thing, you don't hear Norman, but Norman says his first thing is, oh, we haven't had a guest in a long time. He's like, no, he wouldn't be a guest. Like, you can tell the sheriff is like, no, he wouldn't be a guest. So Norman already had a lie. Like, no, we haven't had a guest in a long time. He's like, no, he wouldn't be a guest. He was a private eye. Name is Arbogast. And Norman basically said he was there, but he left. He hangs up the phone, and the sheriff said, yeah, your detective told you He couldn't come back because he was going to question Norman Bates' mother. Yes, yeah, that's true. And the sheriff says, Norman Bates' mother's been dead and buried for 10 years. First case of murder-suicide in the town's history or whatever, or county. He said Norman found them dead together, and his wife says in bed, And so Norman is having a conversation with his mother about the girl, about the investigation. And Norman is telling his mother, I need to put you in the fruit cellar just for a few days. And she's complaining about having to go in the dank fruit cellar. And she doesn't want to go. So you see Norman carrying her down to the cellar. So they hide. He hides it pretty well of what the absolute truth is, because you're still puzzled. Like, wait a minute, but she is, what's going on? She is there. And then we get Sam and Lila checking in to the Bates Motel, posing as a couple and saying, he's like, don't worry about the guest book. He's like, no, I need to sign in. My boss is paying for this. I'll need a receipt. He wants to look at the guest book. Here's a good piece of trivia I didn't remember is $10 is what it costs first at the Bates Motel. That seems like something would have been on one of our trivia nights.
Yeah.
Even if it's not a famous number, but it's $10.
How much was it?
Yeah. They're talking about, Lila and Sam are talking about motives for the $40,000. It's like he's got a dead end business here. He wants to be able to get out. That $40,000 would get him out of here. And of course, it's a great, I don't know if it's actually a MacGuffin or not, but everyone assumes that just the motivation of the money.
Yeah, everyone, right. Every character in there thinks the money's the motivation.
Right.
But we already know where the money is.
Right.
Norma had no
clue. That's a great thing that money is, for Marion, it was a motivation, but
yeah,
it's not motivation at all. People don't even know it exists. Like Norman doesn't even know it exists. So that's a great little, whatever you want to call it, twist. But Sam is keeping Norman busy in the office while Lila walks up to the house. And Lila is walking up the stairs, looking around. She looks around the house. Lila walks into the cellar, sees Mrs. Bates, and who's a skeleton, and she screams. Norman walks in, and you can clearly now see that it's Norman with the wig on in a dress. He's got a big butcher knife, but luckily Sam stops him before he can get to her. He basically wrestles him the knife away from him, subdues him. And we get the, here's where we get the psychiatrist is in the police station. You got all the cops and Sam and Lila and all the major players here, the sheriff's there. And the psychiatrist comes back after talking to him. And he said, I got the whole story, but not from Norman. He no longer exists. And Lila says, did he kill my sister? He said, yes and no. And the psychiatrist asked the cop, do you have any unsolved missing persons? Like, yes, two young girls.
He said, dredge the swamp around the hotel.
Yeah. And then basically, so he did it. Well, the mother did it. But Lila also says, is my sister dead? It's like, yes, she is dead. But the mother is the one that killed him. They basically explain that, that the woman that his mother had an affair with or married her or whatever, basically that pushed him over the line and he killed them both. He stole her corpse, a weighted coffin was actually buried. One of the cops says, so he's a transvestite. He's like, no, not exactly. Not exactly. Someone mentions in the $40,000, who got that $40,000? It's like the swamp. And he's like, those were crimes of passion, not profit. And a little thing where we go before we go to Norman's little room here with the straitjacket on. I'm sure you knew Ted Knight plays one of the two cops. No lines, but obviously it's Dead Night. Yeah. No lines, but he got to be in a pretty big movie here well before he was really famous.
Well before he was Baxter.
Right, exactly.
Ted Baxter.
Yeah, Ted Baxter. And it, there's a voiceover here where Mrs. Bates is talking and she's saying stuff like, "It's a sad when the mother speaks the words that condemns her own son, but I couldn't allow them to believe that I would commit murder." Like, you know, they'll put him away just as they should have 10 years ago and more stuff about. And she says, "They're probably watching me. I'm not even going to swat that fly." Why? They'll say, "Why? She wouldn't even harm a fly."
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah. And
of course, you get that good look, that good right. Perkins right. looking straight up.
Yeah, exactly. Which sort of becomes a Kubrick thing of sort of that kind of look. And that's the end. All you see is the car being towed out of the swamp. And that's the way it ends.
Yeah.
And yeah.
It's a. Story.
Yeah.
Not the story, but the way it's told. Mm-hmm. A lot of it, talking about the psychiatrist mm-hmm. there, Simon Elkin's character. Mm-hmm. Generally, you don't introduce a character like that at the end.
Right.
He came in like the last 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And they had this big scene where it described everything going on.
Right.
And apparently Hitchcock hated that scene. Huh. But the powers that be wanted the audience to really know what was going on. Thought they were a little more clueless and,
right.
and smart.
Yeah.
So.
That's probably a good idea, actually. Yeah.
So.
Okay. Well, and we'll be back right after this.
Is your time so empty?
No. Well, I run the office and tend the cabins and grounds and do little errands for my mother, the ones she allows I might be capable of doing.
And do you go out with friends?
Well, a boy's best friend is his mother. You've never had an empty moment in your entire life, have you?
Only my share.
Where are you going? I didn't mean to pry.
I'm looking for a private island.
What are you running away from?
Why do you ask that?
People never run away from anything. The rain didn't last long, did it? You know what I think? I think that we're all in our private traps, clamped in them, and none of us can ever get out. We scratch and claw, but only at the air, only at each other. And for all of it, we never budge an inch.
Sometimes we deliberately step into those traps.
I was born in mine. I don't mind it anymore.
Oh, but you should. You should mind it.
Oh, I do. But I say I don't.
You know, if anyone ever talked to me the way I heard, the way she spoke to you...
Sometimes, when she talks to me like that, I feel I'd like to go up there and curse her and leave her forever. Or at least defy her. But I know I can't.
We are back here on the podcast talking about Psycho. I tell you what, Vince Vaughn is just so great in this movie.
Wait, not the 1998 version by Gus Van Sant, but the original.
That's right.
1960 version.
Oh, that's right. Never mind.
So I don't remember talking about Vince Vaughn or Gus Van Sant.
Oh, okay. Okay. That makes more sense now because the Rotten Tomatoes score on this is 96.
Yeah.
So that one probably didn't get a 96.
I'm pretty sure. Probably like
50 or something. Yeah. And the audience score 95.
High for both of them.
Yeah, high. Very high. Should have been higher even. But yeah, high. You know, for sure. The budget on the movie, $800,000.
Made a bunch of money, though.
Made some money. Box office?
Like 40 million?
Well, most things said 50, but I also saw some that said 32 million. I put 50 on it, but I'm not sure if that's actually correct.
Hitchcock apparently cut his fee. which is like $325,000, to get a percentage of the movie to help get it made. Even though he's doing it on a super low budget, he wanted to bring it under $1 million.
Right.
He wanted to make a low budget black and white that's really good.
Right. After doing North by Northwest was a huge, splashy,
multi well made movie. Hollywood didn't make as much as they hoped. Yeah. So they agreed. They're like, yeah, sure, we'll cut your fee for Hitchcock, no problem.
Yeah.
And then it made a crap load of money. He made like 15, 20 million off the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so I put it down as 50 million, but there's anywhere from 32 to 50, I saw. So,
and he, Hitchcock later sold or turned over his rights to this movie and some other stuff and got a bunch of stock in MCA, which made him one of the largest stockholders in that company and gazillions more dollars.
Okay. The adjusted box office, 461 million. So,
decent.
Pretty good. Certainly. Well above average compared to all the movies on my list. Not near the top, but definitely above average. This movie, the IMDb list of all time, number 37 on the IMDb list. That's pretty good.
Yep.
The list that counts, the only list that counts, is the AFI Top 100. The original list, 1998, is number 18, but the newest list, 2007, is number 14. So it's
moved up.
It's climbing some, which shows how respected this movie is. Because an old movie tends to drop a bit between the two lists, and this one did not. So it's great to see it going up. AFI has other different lists. One of them is AFI Top 100 Thrills, and it's number one of all time, Top 100 Thrills, which doesn't. It's not just horror movies, scary movies. It's also things like North by Northwest is on there. Other stuff.
Thrills,
like that.
Not necessarily
horror, yeah. But yeah. Here's some other on that top 100 thrills. Here's some other numbers, and these are all ones that on my podcast. There's a bunch that made this list. Number two is Jaws. Number five is Silence of the Lambs. Six is Alien. 11 is Godfather. 15 Deliverance. 19 is The Great Escape. 29 is Shining, 35 Jurassic Park, 39 Die Hard, 43 Wizard of Oz, 53 Pulp Fiction, number 68 Halloween.
Wow.
So a bunch of, these are all movies that are on my list that I also made this list. So a lot of great ones there. Like, I love seeing the respect for Deliverance there too, because that's still not a super famous movie. And I'm glad to see it's pretty high.
Got a couple of super famous scenes, but other
yes.
than that.
Yeah. The all-time AFI villains list, number two, Norman Bates.
Number one?
It was Hannibal Lecter, I think. Hannibal Lecter. Oscar nomination for director, for Lee, for supporting actress.
It's like Hitchcock's fifth nomination. He never won, did he?
I don't think so. Cinematography, I've seen this a few times, was separated in a certain era from black and white and color. Cinematography, black and white being separated makes sense because in an art set direction, black and white, those were nominations but not wins. There's a Golden Globe win for Janet Leigh for supporting actress. This movie was released September 8th, 1960. Do you remember when you first saw the movie? Did you see it in theaters?
September 8th, which is roughly where September 9th.
Right.
Wow, that close.
Yeah. Yeah.
I did not see this in theater because I was not born yet.
Oh, you weren't? Okay.
No.
Okay.
I recall I probably saw it on like Channel 17 late at night. When I was 11 or 13, somewhere in that range.
Yeah.
And it was the TV edited version,
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't remember the first time I saw an unedited cut of this.
Yeah. I definitely remember the first time I saw it. For a long time, even though I like scary movies, I knew of Psycho, and I was just like, doesn't sound that great. Whatever reason, I just like didn't want to see it. I remember in the early days of me having VCR, I think maybe a year after, I think it was probably like 1985, USA ran it late night, and I recorded it and watched it the next day or whatever, and I was blown away. And it was certainly the TV edited version, but blown away by it. By like, holy shit, this is way better than I ever thought it would be. way better. And the twist and the story and everything that happened, like, first time I saw it, holy fuck, this is a great movie. I don't remember when the first time I saw the unedited version either, but I've certainly seen that version many times. But yeah, first time I saw it, blown away by it. And then after that, I think what maybe the reason they were airing Psycho was the fact that Psycho 2 or Psycho 3 might have been in theaters at the time, so there's renewed interest. And in one of those, Psycho 2 or 3 is considered a really good movie. I can't remember which one. Well, might be 3, actually.
It was scheduled to be put on TV for the first time in like 1966.
Okay.
But right around that time in California, like a state senator was stabbed to death on the road. And so rather than Psycho out at the same time that incident was happening, they delayed it, and it didn't show up on TV until like 1970.
Really?
10 years later.
Wow.
And then became like a staple of the late night horror stuff, you know, the midnight movie, so to speak.
Yeah. But part two and three were, you know, maybe 82 and 85, something like that. And I remember one of them is actually considered really good, one of the sequels. I can't remember which one. I've seen them both once. The same time I saw this, I think, and one of them's considered really good, actually. Other movies in theaters at the time, The Apartment, Inherit the Wind, Ocean's 11, Spartacus, Magnificent Seven, and The Alamo. So which of those have you seen the most?
So let me look at I have seen The Apartment. I have seen Inherit the Wind, Ocean's 11, the original Rat Pack one. Spartacus, Magnificent Seven. I've probably seen Magnificent Seven the most of all these movies, even Psycho.
Okay.
That's the real runner, original American Western version of Akira Kurosawa's Seven Samurai.
Yeah.
I remember loving that movie.
I've definitely seen Psycho the most easily. I've seen Ocean's 11, the original, once. I've seen The Apartment once. The reason I watched The Apartment was when the original AFI list came out in the late 90s. I started to watch many of these classics.
Well, I was watching these on Channel 17 here in Atlanta. And Saturday, Sunday morning, they'd have classic movie from the 50s and 60s. So, from the mid 70s to the 80s, beginning of the 80s, it was the station for me to watch on Saturday, Sunday morning to watch old movies. I saw all of these movies there.
Yeah. And Inherit the Wind, I love that movie too. I love that movie. It's a great movie.
It was like one of the first movies I think of, always thought of as being a historical movie, historically accurate. Not really.
Not really.
But I didn't know any better.
Right.
But it was one of those foundational movies to build up and learn what really is accurate, what isn't accurate.
Yeah. Yeah. Apartment's great. Great. Jack Lemmon and Shirley MacLaine. Love that movie. And Fred McMurray. but I've definitely seen Psycho the most, for sure. Way more than all of these combined. Way more. Easily. The director of this movie. What's his name?
Alfred Hitchcock.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And he was in the movie. He's in all of his movies a little bit. Very early on, you know, when she's walking back to the office after the fair. Mm-hmm. He's outside the door. Mm-hmm. And apparently he said he wanted to put himself in the movie very early. Mm-hmm. People looked for him in the movie.
Right.
And he didn't want them to distract from what was really going on. So he put himself in really early and got out of the way.
Oh, okay. I had forgotten. I mean, I knew he's famous for showing up in his movies, but I'd forgotten he was actually there. But some other movies he directed. He directed a lot of movies. And these are just some of the more well-known ones. The Man Who Knew Too Much, The 39 Steps, Sabotage, Rebecca, Foreign Correspondent, Suspicion, Saboteur, Lifeboat, Rope, Strangers on a Train, Dialing for Murder, Rear Window, Suspicion, Vertigo, North by Northwest, The Birds, Marnie, Frenzy. So, Rear Window is definitely the closest one to making the list. I assumed Rear Window would make the list when I started putting them together. It did not. It came close. I watched it again. I was like, I guess not. Yeah. The Birds, when I was a kid, was my favorite Hitchcock movie before I ever saw
it. When I was a kid, it was such a creepy movie.
Right. And The Birds it's just one that translates better to a younger mind.
Nowadays, even though I just see a bunch of birds like hanging around, they're like, rah, 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 and I'm like, what's really going on here?
Yeah. Yeah. You know,
and fine cover.
Yeah, it's the birds. I don't think it's as great as definitely as I used to think. But and I've seen North by Northwest. I don't love it. But one that's came up for me a lot in the last 15 years is Strangers on a Train. I fucking love that movie and didn't make my list, but man, that scene of at the tennis match of the one guy, you know, he's looking straight at the guy and the entire audience at a tennis match, their heads going left to right, left to right.
Yeah.
He's the one standing still looking.
Yeah.
That's creepy as fuck. That is good movie making right there. And that's a good movie. And the basis for Throw Mama from the Train and some other movies too, probably. But you know, the whole idea about you murder someone for me, I'll murder someone for you. We won't be a suspect in either one.
Yeah.
And man, that's a good one.
Speaking of influences, I'm gonna read this little paragraph here from IMDb.
Mm-hmm.
This is about Psycho.
Mm-hmm.
Multiple characters in Halloween, 1978. Mm-hmm. Are inspired by this movie, Psycho.
Okay.
Jamie Lee Curtis was cast as the heroine in the movie based on the casting of her mother, Janet Leigh, in Psycho.
Yeah.
Dr. Sam Loomis,
mm-hmm.
What's his name? Donald Pleasance.
Right.
Is directly named after John Gavin's character, the boyfriend of Marion in this movie.
I forgot about that.
The name of Marion Chambers, the nurse in Halloween,
mm-hmm.
Is inspired by Marion and Judge Chambers. Billy Loomis, the killer from Scream,
mm-hmm.
was also inspired by Sam Loomis in Psycho.
Yeah.
Also, Bates High School in Carrie is inspired by Norman Bates.
Okay.
So
Bates High School.
Psycho had a lot of influence across
many,
many years.
Yeah. Psycho is, I've talked about movies that get referenced a lot, movies on my list that get referenced. Wizard of Oz is clearly number one. No, there's no debate. But Psycho is. Yeah. In the top five, probably.
You're mentioning the shot from Strangers on a Train, the tennis thing, and I was reminded of Ocean's 11,
mm-hmm.
when the hotel is being imploded,
mm-hmm.
and they're all around them to pull a plunger and all kind of stuff, and they show a shot of the crowd, and everyone turns to look at the hotel going down, except for our two main characters who are looking at.
Yeah.
Julia Roberts
and
the other guys.
Okay.
Everyone else turns and they're looking straight ahead. Yeah.
True. Yeah. This movie is very, very influential, very famous. One of the most famous twist endings. Most people, if you're making a list of the greatest scary movies of all time, assuming you don't consider Jaws a scary movie, which it certainly is in parts. The Psycho would be number one on a lot of those lists. This is considered Hitchcock's best movie, but in recent years, Vertigo has climbed a lot in people's respect. And,
you know, Psycho has had another cultural effect on America that people probably aren't even aware of.
What's that?
I'm going to read this again. Mm-hmm. From the thing. Before Psycho,
movie
theaters would play shows on rotation all day long.
Yeah, yeah.
People would frequently come in the middle of one and stay till the middle of the next showing, leaving when they came in.
Mm-hmm.
But Hitchcock made all the movie theater owners sign a contract that they would not let anyone in until the start of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Once they were late, they would not be let in until the next showing.
Mm-hmm.
This started formalizing the whole process of mandatory seating times at theaters, which continues still today.
Yeah, well... I knew about that. And here's the actual tagline from this movie. The picture you must see from the beginning, or not at all, for one will be seated after the start of, for no one will be seated after the start of Alfred Hitchcock's greatest shocker, Psycho. Yeah, that's actually the tagline.
They went to such effect that they created background music for the lobbies, especially for the time when Psycho was there. And every couple of minutes go, 5 minutes till Psycho time, 4 minutes till Psycho. People didn't know how to count down to when they get in the theater because they knew that at a certain point they wouldn't be let in.
Yeah, yeah. The Bechdel test on this one. Got Hitchcock's daughter. I know she has a name, but I can't think of it. And Marion.
Yeah, they do talk.
Yeah.
And they talk business. But that's pretty much it. It's early on.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, there's no real female-to-female contact until Lily? No, not Lily. Lila and the judge's wife are with Sam Loomis, right. But they're talking about the case.
Yeah.
And they are talking about Norm, but not really, but they're talking about the case. And there's, so, but they're not really talking to each other because it's the guys are there as well. So yeah. The guys talking.
Yeah.
So except for that,
I don't think so. Steve Parker on this, I'm going to give it to Ted Knight, even though he has no lines. I don't care.
We're popping up.
It's great to see him.
Judd
Smales.
Judd Smales.
We give it to Judd Smales because Ted Knight. It's time to play the games we play here.
This is the second Baxter movie in a row we've had. Anchorman had Baxter, named after Ted Baxter.
True.
But about Ted Knight, now we have Ted Knight.
That's true. You have a name for me. I'm going to have a minute to guess how many movies we can in a minute.
Yeah. Okay. Have I thought of a name? I'm going to get some. Warren Beatty.
Bulworth.
One.
Bonnie and Clyde.
Two.
Shampoo.
Three.
Reds.
Four.
Dick Tracy.
Five.
Splendor in the Grass.
Six.
That movie we talked about a little bit ago where he plays Howard Hughes and I can't remember the name of it.
Six.
Heaven Can Wait.
Seven.
And I can't remember anymore. I know there's a few more for sure, but I'll just say that Heaven Can Wait, I liked that a lot when I was a kid because it was about a football player, so. Might as well say time because I can't think of any more.
I can think of McCabe and Mrs. Miller.
Oh, yeah.
Parallax View.
Yeah.
I think he got all the ones he directed. Mm-hmm. That the one, I can remember the new one, the 2016. There are a couple other ones that he was in that he didn't direct or write or anything like that.
Produced.
Yeah. So, there's much more out there.
Okay. You ready for your name?
Sure.
Jamie Lee Curtis.
Halloween.
One.
Trading Places.
Two.
True Lies.
Three.
I'd like to really name all the other Halloween movies that she was in, but I really don't know the full names of them.
Yeah.
Halloween 2.
Four.
Halloween H2O.
Five.
My Girl.
Six.
My Girl, two.
Seven.
Fierce Creatures.
Eight.
Done.
All right, time.
There's a lot more I missed.
Did you say Fish Called Wanda? I know you said Fierce Creatures.
Yeah, that's why I said Fierce Creatures. I had that in there.
I'm concentrating so much on what number I have to say next.
Yeah, I can't remember the follow-up. It wasn't a sequel. It's a follow-up.
I thought of Christmas with the Cranks, too. Oh, with that one. And Prom Night, which I actually liked a lot when I was younger.
Was she in Carrie?
No, she wasn't. But, you know,
It's
pretty good. She's been in some stuff.
Yeah.
So who's your guy in this movie?
Who's my guy? Wow. I'm going to have to go with Janet Leigh.
Mm-hmm.
The whole big fake out of her being the lead that killing her off.
Mm-hmm.
Plus the big shower scene. Apparently, she only had 3 weeks to work in the movie and a whole week of that was the shower scene.
Okay.
But I think she did great. I believe right up until she was killed that, you know, she was the lead. It was,
right,
whatever was going to happen was going to be her getting through and surviving.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
I go with Arbogast, Martin Balsam, just because I like him. I remember he used to be on Archie Bunker's Place. Yeah. I think he played the guy that ran the bar, kind of, or
he was
the bartender or something like that.
Archie Bunker's Place is correct. I suppose right. Family.
He right. was like Place.
The partner. Archie Bunker Bar.
Yeah, and he's been in a lot of good stuff. Trail Varying Men. He's been in a lot of good things. Martin Balsam. I like his, got a unique look to him, I guess. And
his daughter became an actress, Talia Balsam.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like a lot of multi-generational people in the movie, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously,
Hitchcock and Janet Leigh. Yeah, that's true. Villains. Who's the villain in this movie?
I'm going to go with Norman Bates on this.
Yeah.
The classic villain.
The number two villain of all time in AFI list.
But like I said, you believe that Marion is the lead and she gets killed, therefore.
Killer. And she's planning on being good now. She's going to go back.
She's driven away with the mad thought, I'm going to take this money and have a better life. And she's rethought how wrong it is. And she's decided to do the right thing. Unfortunately, she stopped at the wrong place.
So he's definitely the villain. So Norman Bates is number two AFI list of all time.
But does he make our list?
He probably does.
Make the case.
Okay. Yeah, he's he makes our list for sure. I think he's more evil than Nurse Ratched, don't you? Okay. Now, is he more evil than Wicked Witch of the West?
I'm gonna go yes.
So, is he more evil than Hannibal Lecter?
Now, here's the rub.
Yeah.
So, we know that Hannibal's on top.
He's number one
on the official Norman's list. Number two on the AFI list.
Yeah.
But is that where it is on our list?
I don't know.
Make the case.
I think that Hannibal stays number one.
You think he does?
Because Norman doesn't completely know what he's doing.
The mother half.
Right.
The psychotic break,
right.
The dual personalities,
right.
Whereas Hannibal knows what he's doing and does it anyway.
Right.
Okay.
Hannibal's completely aware of what's going on. He's not even, he's got problems, but he knows what he's doing. So I think Norman Bates is number two on our list now.
Number two?
Yeah, and that would knock the shark from Jaws off our list.
Arr.
So.
Well, he got a new part in the Suicide Squad, so
that's true. That's true. He did, didn't he?
So
we got a new number two on the list, which also guarantees that he's going to be on the list at the end because we don't have that many movies left.
Correct.
Yeah.
Or does it guarantee how many movies are left? Are there nine movies left?
I don't know.
I believe there are nine left. So in theory, he could be knocked off if every single movie
I think there's eight left. So, but of course, not all those movies are going to have an evil person. So.
True. Or at least make the list.
Right. So would this be on your top 100 list?
Believe it or not, I'm not sure. And the reason is that the most recent watching, I saw so many different story things that disturbed me. The choice of following the main character and the killing in the middle. I had never really noticed that before as a storyteller. It was just part of the movie. The way the ending, I think we mentioned the Simon Oakland's psychiatrist character coming at the end and giving all the exposition about what's going on. I didn't like that.
Okay.
I also really almost didn't like that sheriff showing up really near the end as well. And then not having much to do about it. He called up Norman and got told, hey, everything's fine. But these are a couple of characters who came in near the end of the movie. And for storytelling, that's you really should be doing that if they're going to be important characters. And they weren't really terribly important. But the psychiatrist really was because he explained everything. If that character had been in there from the beginning or someone else had been there from the beginning, he could at least explain his own position in the story. I would have liked it. And there's something about the very ending, let's say the last 20 minutes, it seemed almost choppy, going from scene to scene, ba-bump, 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 as opposed to more even flow narrative, which I don't mind. I just wanted to look at it more to see if I thought it was really deliberate or if it was just he ran out of time and money and he filmed what he could and put it together the way he could. I'd rather do a deep dive in the movie before I decide if I want to.
Okay.
Put it on my list. I like it, but there's just some watching brought up some disturbing things about it that I have to get out of my head before I can place it.
Okay. It is on my list though.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Oh my gosh. I'm not to guess.
So Paul's trying to guess where it is on my list. We're about 92 movies in or so, or 93, 94, and 92 movies, I think. I'm counting the recap episodes.
So tell me exactly how well do you like this movie?
I like it. I like it a lot.
You like it a lot?
I like it a lot.
Yeah. Are you just messing with me?
I like it a lot.
Okay.
It's a classic.
29.
Correct.
Yes!
Wow. Paul finally got it right.
Thanks for the hint.
I like it a lot, and Paul finally got it right.
I finally got one right.
29. Like now, Carrie's going to call and congratulate you live on air.
is this the oldest movie on your list from 1960? Or?
Well, no, Wizard of Oz.
Wizard of Oz, okay.
But I'm pretty sure it's the second oldest. Pretty sure it's second oldest.
Nothing from the 50s?
I don't think so, or the 40s.
I didn't look through the list here.
Pretty sure. Paul finally got it right. It only took about, about 92 movies to do it, I think. Yeah, we got 8 left, so this is 92 movies. Not including the recap episode, so 92 movies. Paul finally got it right. And we've, like we said, we're waiting to do the last 5 movies in order.
The number one, the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Right.
We're going to do them in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
And the next 3 movies we already have planned out, but Paul's going to get at least 1 more right.
I have a chance to get at least
good 1 more. It's a good chance he's going to get 2 right out of the final 3.
We're going to hear left off the list, we have not gotten to our number 99, mm-hmm. number 85, number 52, mm-hmm. and that's it. Now, if I can get 2 out of the 3, that's great. The third one is the last one there.
Right. I'm saying you got 1 for sure. Yeah.
So if I get 2,
you'll probably get 2 out of the 3, and you might get all 3. Actually, there's a pretty good chance you'll get all 3.
So it all depends on where I think the next couple of movies might fall.
Yeah.
On your list, and then just listen to your visual clues, mm-hmm. your vocal clues.
Yeah. And Paul finally got 1 right.
Yay!
At the odds of, it's just unbelievable.
Carrie Means is sending you a text right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Paul, it took you long enough.
Yeah, he's doing it in the Frolog voice. He's got they got party hats on. We got a live remote from there, from his house. Paul got 1 right. Number 29, yeah. Psycho.
The last 3 movies left before the top 5 are all below 50. Mm.
Mm-hmm.
And 2 of them are 85 or less. Mm-hmm. But that number 99.
Yeah.
It's going to be a toughie.
Yeah. It didn't make the list. I'll just mention again, Strangers on a Train. I've already described it. Don't need to say it anymore, but it didn't make the list. Any plugs?
Not this time.
No? Plugs is just listen to the podcast.
Yes.
And now we're doing Psycho for October, and the next movie is also for October. And next week, Brains. They don't actually say that in the movie. That's probably from a Simpsons episode. But next week we're doing Night of the Living Dead, the original real zombie movie.
George Romero,
1968.
And the only thing I say about it is, if you finally get through the night, don't be the first one to stick your head out the door.
No, absolutely. And so, yeah, Night of the Living Dead next week on 100 Movies I Love.
100 Movies You Love.
Understand, I don't hate her. I hate what she's become. I hate the illness.
Wouldn't it be better if you put her someplace?
You mean an institution? A madhouse? People always call a madhouse someplace, don't they? Put her in someplace.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean it to sound uncaring.
What do you know about caring? Have you ever seen the inside of one of those places? The laughing and the tears. And the cruel eyes studying you. My mother there. But she's harmless. She's as harmless as one of those stuffed birds.
I am sorry. I only felt... It seems she's hurting you. I meant well.
People always mean well. They cluck their thick tongues and shake their heads and suggest oh so very delicately. Of course, I've suggested it myself, but I hate to even think about it. She needs me. It's not as if she were a maniac, a raving thing. She just goes a little mad sometimes. We all go a little mad sometimes. Haven't you?